Blog Talk Radio.
Job time, job time.
This is my daddy on the Saturday flight from the Tower of Power, the very top story in my wavy gravy groovy gravy rocket laboratory, where we're bending every effort and making every test to be sure that our records are always the best. You see, well, before we play them on this crazy wavy air, we dip them in this smoking vat with extra special care, wearing thick big rubber gloves and using special tongs. We make the Mad Dad acid jest on the up-and-coming songs.
Man, we had a lot of strange but really cool characters come out of Cleveland, Ohio. That was Mad Daddy Pete Myers there. Little old clip I got. Good evening. Welcome to Erie House, Oldie Timey Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Scoop Show. And I am in accompaniment with
Dave Bigley from Weirdest, Really Bad Movie, and Spaceship One. And also, here in the green room is it green? What's mold? I'm sorry.
No. Not mold. I tell you. It is not a goat. It is I, Gargagul. Blay, blay. Oh, holy good grief. I don't know.
Hey, Gar, it is not a bad thing to be called the goat.
That's right. That means the greatest of all time.
Yeah, that's what it stands for, especially in sports circles. Greatest of all time. So if someone calls you the GOAT, that could be a compliment.
But if someone calls you a GOAT and you're actually a buffalo, that's just confusion, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
But you're one of the GOATs, Gar, because you've been doing it for 15 years.
Gar, 15 years!
That's one anniversary today.
My freaking crazy. Yeah.
Well, is it 15 years ago today, Gar?
No, 15 years this month. I have no idea what the actual date is.
That, I think, is close enough.
But again...
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Fred, you remembered.
How could I ever forget the happiest day of my life?
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
Well, thanks, fellas, it sure was.
Happy she and happy he, they're both as happy as can be, celebrating merrily their happy anniversary.
And I didn't forget you, darling. Happy anniversary.
A tie with spots on it already. Just what I always needed.
Oh, Fred.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
All right, fellas, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. We now say emphatically it's happy anniversary. Not another day could be a happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy, 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 happy anniversary.
All right, knock it off.
From us to you guys.
Follow that up with the happy, happy joy song.
Yes.
Yes, I'm telling you. Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what. If we were allowed to play stuff, boy, I'll tell you, we could have some fun. But we're at the radio. We could have more different kind of fun. Different kind of fun.
That's right. That's right.
But hearing the voice of Fred is very radio-esque.
Yes.
Yes, yes. He was all over radio. Fred Allen.
Yep. He was.
And Life with Luigi and just about on every show out there at one time or other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, including
like
the Shadow.
Man's
he was Shreevy. He was Shrevey for a while, even on The Shadow.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a poor man's Mel Blanc.
Well, they did work together on the Flintstones, so...
Yeah,
they did.
Well, really, four of the all-time greats. You got Bea Benaderet, you got Ellen Reed, Mel Blanc, and I forget the lady who played Wilma. Or CW
do.
When we need her.
I know.
Yeah.
You did a lot of research.
And Dale has an anniversary, too. Go ahead and play it again.
That's right. That's right. Hit it again.
Oh, yeah.
Dale has an anniversary.
It is Dale's anniversary. Oh. It's Dale's anniversary, everyone.
You know what's messed up? In 1985, I was married. September. So, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 34 years of a life sentence so far, so.
I wouldn't mind doing it again. It was
well,
fun.
Well, I'll tell you this, Dale. You're not getting time off for good behavior.
No. Definitely not. I am damned. I am doomed. And I am happy that we are celebrating together with friends in radio. And, Gar, you did a lot of research, you were telling us, on one of our episodes tonight. Shall we start with that?
We can.
We did. Yeah, I handed this off to Gar because I said, Gar, I looked all over the internet. I cannot find a date on this South African suspense because the British did a version of suspense and so did South Africa. And so I handed it off to Gar because he is the guru of finding these things. Now, listen to some of the different places where Gar went to try and find information.
Hunter Gar.
Yes. So I ended up understanding that this was broadcast on a radio program or a radio station called Springbok, B-O-K, Springbok Radio. And let's see, Suspense was aired on there, 1968, 1970. And then again, there was some type of a malaise. I don't know what it was. But then they picked up again, 1982 to 85. And let's see. The goof was there were 44 episodes found that you could listen to using your interwebs. I went to archive.org. I went, there's a Facebook group for Springbok Radio. I contacted them and said, hey, do you have air dates? They were like, no. And so I went bouncing around the internet even more, and I found an actual print broadcast air date for one day of their broadcasting. Suspense wasn't on there, but it told me that means that it was in print. You can find it in print in old newspaper morgues, no pun intended. We love scary stuff, but it's called a morgue where you have all these old newspapers. You can find all this. So I found out that it was somewhere between one date and the other. And the date we're running with is going to be in 1982. Although I did do this, more research. So in the research was that there were three advertisers. There was Charleston Cigarettes, there was South African Airlines, and there was some Schweppes liquor or something. All of those predated before the radio station began, and they're still viable today, so no luck there. I was trying to go, well, if one of them didn't, if they don't make Charleston's anymore, then there's our clue. I couldn't find anything. So I did extrapolate from the dates from the 44 we have, and I did find a date, sort of.
Did you run it through the Garculator? Double check your math?
No, because the Garculator is just for money.
I see.
There was no money involved that I know about, but there was a date of Friday, according to Dave, help me out, Friday, March 26, 1982.
All right, we can go with that. This is an episode of Suspense called The Man Who Was Dead. Suspense.
Are you Dr. Turner?
Yes,
could
I am.
Could I see you, please? It's very important.
Well, couldn't it wait until tomorrow? I mean, you know, it's very late. Well, after 11...
Well, it's very important, Doctor. I'm sorry to trouble you, but...
Oh, all right, then.
You see, Doctor, it's like this. My name is Blaine. Perhaps that means something to you.
Well, as a matter of fact, no, it doesn't.
Horatius Blaine?
Horatius Blaine. Wait a minute. Horatius Blaine. Yes, I seem to remember.
Yes, yes.
There was a Horatius Blaine found dead at Glenvale. And if I remember correctly, I examined the body.
And?
An accident, if I remember. Yes.
It wasn't an accident, Doctor. Horatius Blaine was murdered.
Oh, come now. Now, wait.
I know, Doctor. Because I am Horatius Blaine. I know what happened that night.
You are... Oh, now, this is ridiculous.
Is it, Doctor? Is it ridiculous? Look at me. Go on, look at me. I was the man you examined, wasn't I? Wasn't I, Doctor?
I stared at the wild-eyed man opposite me. I stared and I remembered. This was the man, but he was dead then, there was no doubt at all. And now he was here in my consulting room in the middle of the night, and I felt an unpleasant prickling at the base of my spine. And fear edged all around me as I faced this man who was dead.
Suspense. The unusual, the unexpected, life, death, and sometimes something in between. Suspense.
Chesterfield. Rediscover the classic American taste of Chesterfield. Chesterfield cigarettes are expertly blended from the finest Oriental Rich Virginia and choice Burley tobacco. For real smoking pleasure, change to Chesterfield. Now made in South Africa in plain and filter. Chesterfield. Internationally, they satisfy.
Ascend. Rise above the clouds with a cool, clean mainstay on the rocks, topped up with Schweppes Sparkling Lemon. Or discover the number one spirit with tonic, tomato cocktail, or any other mixer. It's a soaring experience.
You can stay if you are for the rest of your life. Or you can change to mainstay, mainstay, mainstay.
You're listening to a bird. A bird more marvelous than any in mythology. A bird that will take you almost anywhere in the world you want to go. Direct and very swiftly. In pampered luxury, with delectable foods and entertainment on the way. A beautiful bird with sleek silver plumage and a distinctive orange tail. South African Airways. We didn't invent flying, we just perfected it.
I can't accept it myself, Doctor.
Oh, but this is ridiculous. Now, come along. Come along, my good man, and sit down and tell me the real story.
All right. Thank you. Well, I was murdered by Marwick and that woman. I remember it all clearly, but I could do nothing. Marwick is very strong, and they rigged everything to make it look like an accident. They were very clever, the two of them, but, well, and of course they always have been. You must tell the police.
But why don't you?
They won't listen.
You've been to them?
Hundreds of times and more, but they wouldn't listen.
And what did they say?
They wouldn't listen to me. They brushed me aside as if I didn't exist. So then I came here to you.
I see. Let's go to the police together tomorrow and I'll explain. They will listen.
It's no good, Doctor. You must go to Marwick. He must accuse him and that woman of murder.
Now, look here. I can't go to them.
No, but you must.
Why don't you?
You just don't understand, do you? And I hoped you would. Of all people, I thought you could help me.
Now, listen to me, Mr. Blaine. Come round and see me tomorrow at 11, and we'll both go to the police.
Oh, it's no use.
And you know, there's another thing. You look to me particularly healthy and strong. Now, if you'd been murdered, you'd be dead, wouldn't you?
I am, Doctor. I am.
Mr. Blaine, I've seen a good many dead people, and I promise you that you don't fit the description at all. Now, please follow my suggestion. Come here at 11 tomorrow, and we'll follow this business through the correct channels.
You don't believe me. You don't. It's all so hopeless. No one believes. There's no one. What can I do to make you? What can I do?
Okay, I'm really feeling very tired, and if you come tomorrow, as I suggested, I'll do all I can to help you then.
No one believes. No one believes.
I opened the door, and the tiny figure stumbled away into the night. And I remember watching him. And in the light of a street lamp, he turned, his eyes dark and reproachful. It was then that I heard Helen beside me.
Darling, what are you standing here for? It's terribly late.
Well, that character over there, you see him?
Where?
That's odd. He's gone. He was standing under that street lamp, and now he's gone. Well, anyway, if he's to be believed, he's dead.
Peter, what are you talking about?
According to him, he's one Horatius Blaine. Now, the last time I saw him, he was lying dead from injuries received in an accident.
You mean the man you've just seen is the same person?
He can't be, obviously, but it is intriguing because, you see, they're identical.
But if he's dead...
I know. If he's dead, he's dead, and that's the end of it. This can't be the same person, obviously, but... Well, they are alike. In fact, my dear, it's quite uncanny.
Well, what did he call about?
To tell me he was murdered by someone called Marwick. Of course, he's a crackpot. People seem to go that way sometimes and pester their unfortunate doctor. Oh, dear. I'm so tired.
What did you tell him?
Well, to call again tomorrow at 11 o'clock, when this affair will be handed over to the police. You know, you've got to placate them. It's no good telling him that he's crazy.
It's odd, isn't it?
Yes, it's very odd. Now, don't you go worrying about this, darling.
The thing is, Peter...
Yes?
The thing is, why did you answer the door in the first place?
Answer the door? Well, the fellow knocked, of course.
But he didn't, Peter.
What?
He didn't knock. You were sitting in that chair there, reading. Then suddenly you got up and went into the hall. I came out to look for you, and you were standing at the door there. You said something about a man under the streetlight. I didn't hear anything or see anyone.
My dear Helen, I heard the fellow clearly, and I saw him clearly. He did knock, and I took him through to my consulting room. I did. I'm not a fool, and I certainly don't suffer from delusions. He told me his name was Horatius Blaine. Now, I ask you, would I make up a name like that, would I? And he mentioned someone called Marwick, and there was some talk of a woman as well.
Oh, well. Oh, let's forget about it, shall we? Come on, darling. Let's go up to bed.
I followed Helen slowly up the stairs. I kept telling myself there was a perfectly reasonable explanation for all this. Then I consoled myself with the thought that I would never see the strange Mr. Blaine again. He would be pestering some other doctor in the morning. But I was wrong there. I was so very wrong. Last night.
Your mysterious visitor.
Oh, Lane. Great heavens, I've forgotten all about him.
Liar. You were talking to yourself about him in the bath.
I wasn't.
Oh, but you were. I heard you. Blaine, Blaine, Blaine. You said the name a dozen times. You know what I think we should do?
We should forget all about it. The man's a crackpot.
Well, it would be intriguing to investigate now, wouldn't it?
Investigate? Investigate what?
His murder.
Oh, Helen. The Horatius Blaine I examined was not murdered. He died from severe injuries. Oh, great Scott, the police were quite satisfied. McNaughton was on the job, and he's a sensible fellow.
All the same, let's investigate just in case. Oh, it would be interesting, wouldn't it?
I haven't the time to play detective, and no more will I allow you to do so.
All I want to do is to find out if there was a man called Marwick associated with Blaine. That's all.
Look, my dear, you forget it.
Oh, but Peter!
You're only wasting your time. Now, please, Helen, stay out of all this, will you? If Blaine comes to me at 11 o'clock today, we'll go to the police and let them sort this out. And I'll tell you exactly what happens.
But, darling,
now, please don't argue.
Yes, Peter.
I remember waiting at 11 o'clock, half in trepidation for Blaine to arrive. But he didn't, and I confess it, I felt relief. I felt this lets me out of a lot. Well, it was at dinner that night that Helen spoke of him again.
He didn't call, did he, Peter?
You mean Blaine?
Of course.
No, but I didn't really expect him to. Just proves what I said in the first place. The fellow's a crackpot. There is a resemblance to the other Blaine, but that is possible. Perhaps he's a brother or something. Anyway, it does let me out of a great deal of unpleasantness.
I checked about Marwick.
You did what?
Checked about Marwick.
Helen,
darling, I had to, and I'm glad I did. I phoned every Marwick in the telephone book.
For goodness sake, why do that?
Because I felt it our duty.
Our duty is to mind our own business, not get involved with some crazy eccentric with a chip on his shoulder. Well, more than likely, Blaine has some feud on with Marwick. And...
Oh, Peter, I wish you'd let me tell you what happened.
All right. Well?
This particular Marwick is G.L., and he lives in Burnham Terrace. He answered the telephone. And when I asked him if he knew Horatius Blaine, he paused before he answered. Then he said, very carefully and cautiously, who is that speaking? Well, of course, I didn't let on. And then he threw down the receiver.
And what does that prove?
It proves that he does know Horatius Blaine. It proves that there might be some truth in what your visitor told you.
Oh, my dear Helen.
But that's not all.
All right, go on.
I went to Burnham Terrace.
You did what?
Now, just keep calm, Peter, and listen to me.
You went there?
I pretended I was carrying out a survey for a detergent manufacturer.
Oh, this beats anything.
It's a broken-down sort of a district, and the house looked deserted. I knocked, and the woman opened the door. Oh, I asked her a few questions. Then I inquired if Horatius Blaine lived there. She gasped with sheer terror and slammed the door in my face.
Oh, you shouldn't have risked doing a thing like that, Helen. You must have been crazy.
Anyway, I'm satisfied that your visitor might have been speaking the truth.
Helen, do you realize what you're saying? Do you?
Yes, I do, Peter. I know what I'm saying. That the man who called last night was Horatius Blaine. And he was dead.
Was früher hätte ich nicht was da Formel. Die M7-Aktie wird die erste feuernden Flecke auf und die Skoonmaak-Aktie was das wir skitter mit. Ja, Punch, was all ihr was gut flecklos skoon und wit.
Wir Flecke euch, was verteilt euch mit dem Simaxiva-Punch.
Die Jahr 2000, die plaatselijke kroeg.
Een bier, meneer. R10.50.
Dus reeds bewys dat Sudden Levens inflasievegter u aftree en levensversekeringspolisse teen inflasie kan beskerm. Doeltreffend, maklik en outomaties. Dus wat ook al gebeur, ik kan vandaag zeker wees van morgen.
En uw sigaar, meneer. R5 alstublieft. Is zo al maar een klein geld.
Stuit inflatie. Kies Sudden Levense inflatie vechter. Ons heeft een winplan voor u.
Yep. Think of the morning, holding your head. Think what can happen before you go back to bed. Think of your body, how you might feel. So the first thing to remember every morning is Shield.
Now you can get day-long extra freshness with Shield. Shield is the sensational sea green soap shot through with a lingering deodorant. It's in the marbling. Shield works for all of you, all over, all day.
Think of your body, how you might feel. So put the honest confidence over. Think of Shield.
Ah, yes, Shield. It shields you from your own stank.
They had the different languages there. There are actually 10 official languages in South Africa.
Uh-oh.
And don't ask me to, they have, what, Ndebele, North Sohoto, Sohoto, Sawi, Hali, Sisonga, Tswana, Venda, Xhosa, Zulu, and Afrikaans. And I tell you, Gar, you said it sounded German, but... You know, I took 6 years of Hogan's Heroes, and that doesn't sound German to me.
The guy said Austria. I heard that. I heard the guy say Austria.
I think it's a Germanic language, to be sure, because it definitely has that sound, but I'm not convinced. I took some German in high school, and I did not catch a whole lot, but I would at least catch something, I think.
Okay. More trying to hunt this down. Okay, so the deodorant soap they're talking about, anti-perspirant deodorant soap, originally named Roxona, right? When was it first made? 1908. Doesn't help us a bit.
No. Well, we know it was sometime after 1908.
Yeah. In South Africa, the brand Roxona is named Shield. So I was like, oh, Shield deodorant. Let's see if it...
That band, they're the ones that had that song, Roxana. You don't have to put...
Yeah, that was it. You don't have to smell like a big pig, Roxana. Scrub you on your arms every day. Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
I was trying to go, well, maybe this will do it. And then there's something else, and I don't know what this means, but I heard Spreck and Flossie, and I was like, what the heck is Spreck and Flossie? Didn't do a thing. I don't know what that was.
Comedy actors from back in the day. I don't know.
That were from Austria, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Spreck and Flossie.
I don't know. Spreck and Flossie. Yeah. Where are you guys? There you are. Dutch is Afrikaans. Dutch sounds a bit like German. Okay. Well, there you go.
There you go. See?
Good old Bob is telling us what's up. So still no luck. So, I was going to say, well, maybe Shield's deodorant soap was only made in 1982, and then we get rid of the 1960s on this. But I don't know, Dave. I'm still out. Yeah, I'm still out. I don't know. 1960, 1980.
Somewhere in there. It's still.
So what do we think about the dead guy? Yes. When a dead guy comes a knocking and nobody hears.
He's a twin.
See, now that would be it. So
that would ruin it. That would ruin it from the dead guy coming back though.
I like the idea of the dead guy.
It would ruin the fact that they invested a name and a title, the man who was dead. It's like, oh, I'm not dead. I'm his twin.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
it could be. What do I know?
Hey, what's it called? Smoke and mirrors? Deflection? Something like that? Yeah, who knows?
Could be. We don't know.
I wonder if I broke my finger. Yeah.
I didn't know you could smoke them here.
Yeah, well, you got to try it really hard.
Try
you got to get it really
the
hot.
70s.
You did a lot of stuff in the 70s. Yeah.
Heavens.
But, hey, this is weird. Okay, we didn't have a problem with this. Back when I smoked and all of the world smoked. Okay, so you were smoking, so you would get, you know, yeah, well, pretty much. And you know, you'd smoke a cigarette. Okay, there you go. Have a good day. You did it. Okay. And, you know, you might get some tar and nicotine in there and all that, you know. But the new thing that they got, the new thing for the kiddies, is to smoke a device. And the device puts nickel and metals into your lungs. I'm like, man, kids, stop. Try smoking tobacco. It's better for you. I mean, if you're going to do it, I mean, yeah.
Start smoking.
Yeah, and it still gives you that nicotine, so, you know, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, metal, nicotine. Let's see, which one?
Erie House Radio does not condone the use of tobacco products by minors. I had to do the disclaimer.
Okay.
Unless they're over the age of 68, because I think that's the legal age now, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
could be.
If you're at 68 to buy them, yeah.
Yeah, when it's too late anyway.
It was a weird concept to understand that you could go and fight and die for your country, but you couldn't buy cigarettes and beer. Okay.
Yeah, the things you're fighting, which are the things you're fighting for, if you think about it.
And apple pie. Yeah, right, yeah.
And beer and cigarettes.
Yeah. And beer and cigarettes. Yeah, yeah, apple pie, beer and cigarettes. Not necessarily in that order.
As a smoker, I think the real deal is people just got sick of seeing us having a good time and had to put a stop to it. All right, no more of that smoking. Get off the bus.
I had a mental joke that if things kept going as they were, this was back in the, I don't know, 1926, that, you know, in order to smoke, I'd have to be bobbing out in the sea 5 miles offshore, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, because they really, you know, they took it.
I worked in one building. What? Their instructions were clear. If you want to go to smoke, find the worst side of the building where the weather is the worst, like in January, that's where you go. Okay.
Well, I mean, if you recall, and this is part of history, is McDonald's used to have little aluminum foil ashtrays.
I
worked at Burger King. We had them too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and restaurants had smoking areas, and then that was a church and state maneuver there, where they were a smoking area. They didn't have that before.
Well, actually, it started off as every place was smoking. Then they had one little corner where smoke, I guess, wasn't allowed to go or something that was called the non-smoking area.
Right.
And then eventually
became
a smoking area that was smaller. And then eventually you had to go outside.
Yeah, they kicked us off the bus. They basically kicked us off the bus.
I remember, there were people smoking cigarettes in the grocery store when I was a little kid. Nobody stopped you, you know. And I went to an Asian market in the 1990s, I think, or 2000. And you could smoke at a supermarket. It was an Asian supermarket, but you could. They didn't care.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I could.
That Burger King I worked at, not only did it allow smoking, it had a cigarette machine in the lobby.
I remember
the
cigarette
good old
machine.
Days. The good old days.
The owner smoked, he had a cigarette machine in there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. If you went to the bowling alley, cigarette machine, you know. If you went to the roller skating rink, cigarette machine,
everywhere.
You know. Yeah.
Yep. They also, even before that, you know what they had? Old-time radio. Let's continue with
that.
Oh, yeah.
How's that for a
good one, Dale.
How's that
for
a segue? Hey.
That was a segue. Yeah.
Yep.
Let's find out what happened to this man. The man who is dead, or was he?
Was he?
I stared at her. She spoke quite calmly. I could scarcely believe my ears. Was this really Helen talking?
Don't you see what it means, Peter?
Helen, what are you suggesting?
I don't understand this, Peter. Not for a single moment. But I'm sure Marwick and that woman did kill Blaine. It all works out. Now, doesn't it?
It's crazy and it's unhealthy. Now, please forget it.
You're frightened, aren't you, Peter?
Yes, yes, I am, I suppose. I don't like thoughts of ghosts. In any case, they don't exist. They can't exist. I'm sure there's some perfectly reasonable explanation for all this.
What are we going to do? Well?
What on earth can we do? I ask you that, Helen. I can't go to Marwick and accuse him of murder. In any case, I dare say the fellow's quite innocent.
But he did act strangely.
Well, perhaps he was surprised at you asking for Blaine. There are dozens of explanations.
I'm going to see Inspector McNaughton.
You'll be wasting his time.
At least I will be doing something to help Blaine.
Help Blaine?
Don't you see? Don't you see? That's why he came to you last night. Because he wants help. He needs help.
I suggested he call on the police, but he said they won't listen to him.
There you see, Peter. That proves it. They won't listen.
That doesn't prove a confounded thing to me.
All right, then. I'm going to McNaughton.
Go to him, then. Do what you like. It's obvious that you won't listen to me.
I wish you'd realize, Peter, that this is something I've got to do.
Well, Mrs. Turner, this is a pleasure. Sit down. Do sit down.
Thank you, Inspector. Peter's told me I'm wasting your time coming here like this, but I feel I should tell you this.
Trouble of some kind?
Do you remember Horatius Blaine?
Horatius Blaine? Oh, yes, of course. Motor accident. Fatal. 14th of February. What about him?
He called on Peter last night.
He did what?
Oh, I know you're going to think this is crazy, but it's true. He called on Peter to say he'd been murdered.
But Mrs. Turner, he was killed. I saw him, there's no doubt at all. Absolutely none. It wasn't murder.
He named a person called Marwick. Now, Inspector, I went to see the Marwicks.
You went to see them?
I mentioned his name, and they were terrified. I'm sure they did kill him.
Now, see here, Mrs. Turner...
Oh, don't tell me this is ridiculous. That it's imagination. That you're sure there's some perfectly reasonable explanation for everything. I tell you, those people did kill that most unfortunate man.
But he couldn't have called on your husband.
He did.
Did you see him?
Well, no, but Peter did, and he talked to him.
But you just told me that your husband doesn't believe.
He does in his heart, but he's too afraid to acknowledge it. Oh, Inspector, you must go round to these people.
And accuse them of murder. Mrs. Turner, that's as much as my job's worth.
If you receive an accusation from someone, you must investigate it, mustn't you?
Well, we do make inquiries, yes.
All right, then. I'm telling you that Horatius Blaine was murdered by Marwick. Now, you've got to do something about this.
It's highly irregular and, I believe, irresponsible. You know, Mrs. Turner, you can't make these accusations without any foundation in them at all.
Please, Inspector.
Oh, honestly. No, but all right. I'll do it. Though heaven knows I'm making a fine fool of myself.
Well, what do you want?
A few questions.
I've got nothing to say to the police. Now get out. Go on before I sit the dogs on you.
I'm coming in. Stand aside.
Oh, a very fine way to treat a lady, I'm sure. Pushing her aside.
What's going on, Sean?
Police officer. And full of cheek he is, too.
Police officer? What the devil do you want?
A few questions about one Horatius Blaine.
Never heard of him. Now come on, officer. Push off. There's nothing for you here.
Talk about the rights of folk in a free country. Pushes his way in, bruises me arm. You see? You see? Finger marks. Oh, I'll have something to say about this. Just you wait.
I'm given to understand that you knew Blaine. That you knew him well.
I've never heard of him, like I said.
Yet this was the address given to us. And your name is Marwick.
Must be some mistake.
Who gave you our address? Oh, I know. Some nosy little blonde who called round here with her sly looks and her questions.
That'll do, Sean. Now push off, mister. You're on the wrong tack this time. There's the door.
That's right. There's the door. And you tell that little blonde to try and pin the murder onto someone else, but leave us alone.
Watch your talk.
Well, all I was saying was
I told you to keep quiet. Now do just that.
Oh, you hit me.
I hit you, and I'll do it again.
Easy does it, Marwick. You asked me who told me to come here.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Who told you?
Blaine himself.
But Blaine is dead. I tell you, he's dead.
I know. But how do you? I haven't mentioned anything about Blaine being dead. Not a word.
Yeah, well, she read it in the paper, mister. It was in the paper. An accident. So he couldn't have called on you.
On the contrary, he did. Although he was dead. He accused you and this woman here of his murder.
No. No, it isn't true. It isn't.
Now watch yourself, John. If you're going to break, you better get up. And that's final.
She's staying here, Marwick. Yes. Blaine called on me and told me quite a story.
I told you not to do it. I told you. I said leave him be, but no. Oh, no. You wanted the cash, so you did it your way.
Look, I told you to be quiet.
Oh. I told you to keep your hands off her, Marie.
He's a killer, he is. He is. He did it and rigged it like an accident.
That's a lie.
Oh, it's the truth. Now he's come back to haunt you. Good. Good. I said it was wrong. I did, Sergeant. I told him not to do it. I tried to talk him out of it, but I couldn't. And now we're both in trouble up to the neck because of him.
Well, I'm getting out of here.
Oh, no, you don't, Marwick. Stay where you are. There are some questions I would like to ask you.
Dis lekker om soggens wakker te word en te weet, daar wag vir jou 'n vriend op jou voorstoep, die Transvaler, huisvriend. Lekker om met jou eie koerant, bus of trein te ry, die Transvaler, reisvriend, ook kantoorvriend, modevriend, skoolvriend, jou maandag tot saterdag vriend. Vir lekker lees, saamgesels, jou propvol koerant, die Transvaler, 'n vriend op wie jy kan reken. Teken nou in of kry hom op die hoek.
When you drive, get into top gear as soon as possible. Lower gear ratios make your engine work 3 to 5 times harder, so get into top gear quickly. If you don't, you're wasting your petrol and your money. BP are working to help you by improving the efficiency of their petrol and the lubricating power of their oil. It's all part of BP's commitment to conserving our scarce resources. BP, we'd like to keep you coming. Save fuel and save your money.
Daarom sê ons seker by die NBS, die Natal Bouvereniging. Ons het nie vergeet waaroor alles gaan by 'n bouvereniging nie.
Well, that's how it is, Doctor. A full confession of murder. It's fantastic. We had no lead on them at all, not an inkling. And now we've got a fully-fledged murderer on our hands.
There's no doubt at all.
No doubt at all. The woman broke when she heard about Blaine, told us everything. It was some money they were after. Marwick killed him, then arranged the accident. It was all very clever, and it did fool us, I confess it. If Mrs. Turner hadn't forced the issue and insisted that I visit Burnham Terrace, they would have got away with it. But there's a great deal I don't understand. For instance, did Blaine visit you?
Yes, I think so.
But you can't be sure, Doctor.
Well, I was tired, Inspector. It had been a busy day. I seemed to talk to someone. Then, of course, perhaps I didn't.
Anyway, Dr. Turner, you've done us a great service. Thank you.
You can thank Helen here. It was all her idea. I wouldn't have gone through with it.
I still can't believe it all worked out the way it did.
Lucky for us, you insisted, Mrs. Turner. It was certainly lucky for us. Ah, well, I'd best be getting back to the station. I've still got a few loose threads to tie up. No. Please, don't trouble to see me out. I know my way.
Goodbye, Inspector, and thank you.
What do you think it all means, Peter?
I've no idea at all, none. It could mean anything.
Do you think he did come that night?
Perhaps. Or perhaps not. The more I think back, the less sure I am.
Yet the name Marwick and everything, it does tie up. I believe he did come. I believe he wanted justice done.
But for heaven's sake, Helen, why choose me? Me, of all people. I don't believe that stuff. I'm a practical man of science. I deal in facts, plain and simple facts. I like things I can see and feel and understand. The rest, I don't know. I just don't know.
Yes, it was an ideal ending, wasn't it? We couldn't have worked it out any better if we tried, could we now? I believe Horatius Blaine had a perfect revenge. And I'm glad for his sake.
Helen took my arm, and we both sat there busy with our thoughts. Of course, Helen was right. The little man had the perfect revenge. But I'll never fully understand.
The unusual, the unexpected, life, death, and sometimes something in between. Suspense.
That's right. You know you're from Cleveland when they say life, death, and you want to say infinity.
Yes.
And you that know. That, yes. It's a Cleveland thing, kids. All right. Did we learn anything from this? Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Anytime you can solve your own murder, you should.
We haven't had that one for a while. Had to bring Johnny back out. Mr. Weissmuller.
Yeah, you bring him back, and then the elephant stampede in the main hall again. You got to stop that deal.
And then them guys sing happy anniversary. Yeah, it's horrible.
Kind of. Well, no, you should never have. No, don't invoke the devil what? By mentioning his name.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
We're going to play the 12-inch version later tonight.
Happy anniversary, but be careful you don't
fill
it. Happy anniversary. Oh,
happy
anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Fred, you
remembered. How could I ever forget the
happiest day of his life. Oh, isn't that nice? We could go on and on, but we had better not.
It didn't occur to me about my own anniversary in September of 85 and in my anniversary of Horrible Horror back in 2007. September must have been a good year for me. I don't know. Or month
September
or whatever.
September was a great year. September was
it
a great year.
It was a great year, I tell you.
September was a great year.
I think that the song out of Fiddler on the Roof.
September was a very good year.
Well, a very good year, September.
Oi! Oi, come on.
Hold on, radio.
Hold on, radio.
Hold on, radio.
Hold on, radio.
And with your kind permission, we'll get to some. How about we go? How about we go to, I don't know, shall we do Crisis?
Yeah! This is a fun story.
It's a good bridge to the last one, I think.
For those of us that are Al Jolson fans, the one thing you have to know is the ego of the man. So as we get into the story, you may understand this a little bit more by knowing that fact.
And with Crisis, we get all of those Dark Shadows music drops.
Oh, good.
They're in there.
That's right.
What
and
more?
There's
much more.
And with all that being said, you ain't heard nothing yet. That's the title of our episode from Crisis, originally broadcast way back in
October 14th, 1976.
70 and 6.
The Golden West Radio Network presents Crisis. Just south of Sunset Boulevard on Gower Street in Hollywood, California, there is a bar called Tony's. Like its clientele, Tony's Bar has seen better days. Tony, whoever he may have been, was influenced by the Art Deco designs of the 1930s when he planned his little lounge. Glass brick curves into the front door from the sidewalk. Behind the glass brick is a blue neon tube, when it works. In the round porthole windows are other neon signs that say Coors and Pabst Blue Ribbon. But this much can be said for Tony's. Although its neighboring storefronts now boast of massage parlors and karate studios, Tony's continues to live in the past, and so do most of its regulars. Movie folks whose names have faded from the screen, writers, bit players, electricians, grips, costumers, even an old ex-agent. They keep Tony's alive. And in a way, Tony's keeps them alive. One of the regulars is a one-time theatrical agent named Irving Caesar, and this is his story. Crazy, you say? Outrageous? Impossible? Well, you decide. Irving will be right back to tell you his story tonight on Crisis. And now, back to Tony's and Irving and the bartender.
Well, what do you say, Irv?
Hi.
Missed you the past few weeks.
Yeah.
You been away?
Yeah, kind of.
Have you been sick?
Why, do I look sick?
Well, you do look a little pale.
Pally, after what I've been through, you wouldn't believe it. Let me have a beer.
Sure. Everyone's been asking about you.
Yeah, especially my creditors, huh?
No, the old gang. Morris Colbert said he thought he saw you over at NBC in Burbank a few days ago. Here's your beer.
Yeah, he probably did.
Irv, you know your hand's shaking.
Yeah, I know.
You okay?
You want to know what's happened to me? I'll tell you. Only I'm going to tell you out front. You're not going to believe it. 2 weeks ago, I think it was on a Monday night, I'm up in the apartment cooking supper, and I get this phone call. And it's from a girl. She says her name's Lee Lorimer. Says she's got a message for me from a client. Wants to come over and talk to me. Well, at my age, you don't turn anything down. So about 9:30, I get this knock on my door, and in comes this doll. Yeah, she's about 25, long black hair, jeans, leather, beads, thongs. You get the scene? I mean, a very with it type, but not too phony. And she comes right to the point.
So you're Irving Caesar.
The name means something to you?
Well, not to me, actually, but to my client. He thinks quite a lot of you.
Well, that's nice to know. I've been retired now for going on 10 years. Listen, what's the deal?
My client needs an agent.
Well, I don't represent anyone anymore, honey.
I know, you're retired, but he thinks you'll be glad to help him.
Honey, I'll tell you the truth. If it's some guy trying to break into the business today, you give him some good advice. Tell him to get himself...
Oh, he's not a newcomer to show business, Mr. Caesar. I guess he's a real veteran.
Who is this client of yours?
Al Jolson.
Come on, what's the gag?
No gag.
What are you giving me? Al Jolson's been dead for 25 years.
26, I believe. I think he said he died in 1950. I really don't remember. I wasn't around.
He said? Hey, what is this?
I'm a psychic, a spirit medium. And every night for the last week or so, Mr. Jolson has been coming through to me. He's very persistent, and he insisted I get in touch with you. He said you knew him very well.
Well, of course I knew Al Jolson. Jolie and me were very good friends. That's one reason I don't appreciate your coming up here with this cockamamie routine.
And he expected you to react this way. He doesn't blame you in the least. But he's ready to reveal himself to you in person, if you'll agree.
Agree to what?
Mr. Caesar, I have a special gift. I can help spirit beings to materialize, and I can hold them very vividly. Only one other person can do that. She's a Russian living in Leningrad.
Agree to what? What am I supposed to agree to?
He'll have to tell you himself.
Well, I argue with the kid until I'm blue in the face, but she don't change her story. Now, I'm just like the next guy. I don't believe in ghosts or spirits or any of that jazz. But I have to admit I'm curious. So I let her talk me into going over to her place. This chick does all right, let me tell you. Drives a Mercedes Roadster. She lives up on Mulholland Drive in the house that Janet Gaynor built. Well, we go inside and she's got one room fixed up kind of like an oriental pad. Tapestry and bamboo and incense and like that.
Just sit down anywhere. Over there is fine.
Where are you going to be?
Here, in this chair.
And what do I have to do?
Nothing.
And you go into a trance, right?
That's right. Actually, with Mr. Jolson, it's very easy. He's very domineering. I can feel his presence already.
Oh, boy.
Yes. He's been waiting for us.
Oh, lady, you're giving me goosebumps. Hey, why'd you do that?
So you can see him better. Don't be afraid. All right, Mr. Jolson.
The only lights in the room are a couple of red Japanese lanterns in the far corner. Why, I can tell you what few hairs I got were standing at attention. And all of a sudden, there was a stirring in the air right in front of me, between the girl and me. And then a sort of a blue haze, like a fog. And then saw help me.
Just hold on, Irving, old man. I'm coming. Here we come. How am I doing? Well, don't just sit there. Say something.
Jolie, is it you?
Well, it ain't Larry Parks.
I can see you.
Yeah, little Lee is the best there is. And what a dish, huh?
Oh, God, Jolie. You don't know what it does to me to see you after all these years. It is you, isn't it?
Listen, I'm going to prove it to you. Remember Crosby's birthday party at his old place before it burned down?
Yeah.
And remember those two little cuties we took for a walk out by the swimming pool? Do you remember?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that in years. It has to be you.
It has to be you. It has to be you.
How are you, Al? What's it like?
It's good. It's good. Listen, nothing to be afraid of. Listen, if it's good for me, for a nice boy like you, it's going to be heaven. But now listen, you got to do something for me.
Anything, Al.
I don't know if you can understand this, Irv, but some of us can't break all our ties with mortal life. What I mean is, I lived a long time and I sang a lot of songs, but I never got tired of hearing that applause. I want to do one more show, just one more.
But how?
Thanks to this little lady here. She can bring me in loud and clear and full of color, right? Well, I want you to fix it up for me to go on Johnny Carson.
Al, you gotta be kidding.
Not me, buddy boy. Listen, I crossed over in 1950, before they had the cable, before color, before they had satellites. Why, if I was to do just one number now on the Carson show, they'd show it around the world. It'd be a great big deal to me, Irving. Can you fix it up?
Well, I don't know. I don't have any contacts anymore.
Listen to me. All you got to do is tell whoever books the Carson show that you can deliver Al Jolson, the real Al Jolson, the jazz singer, on his stage in person. This has got to be the greatest act in the history of showbiz. Oh, I don't want to burn her out. A little lady's getting tired. You do it, Irv. I'm counting on you. Do it or I'm going to haunt you. Oh, Al.
Jolie. Al. He's gone. Hey, Miss Lorimer. Miss Lorimer, you all right?
Just a minute. I'll be all right. Oh, there. Oh, he is a very demanding person.
Oh, that's Jolie, all right. Boy, when he wanted something, man, he wanted it right now.
Well, can you do what he asked?
I don't know. Listen, are you sure you can bring him back again?
Yes.
Well, how do you do it?
It's hard to explain. Well, it's like everyone who ever lived in the world has a connection on a big switchboard, see?
Yeah.
And I can sort of plug in to their spirits. What you saw tonight was Mr. Jolson's spirit body.
Well, it looked just like him.
It was him. People are made up of physical and spiritual bodies. When we die, we lose our physical form, and the spirit form takes over.
Oh, wow. Don't tell me anymore. Boy, I gotta let this sink in.
I'm afraid I'm too exhausted to talk much more tonight anyway, Mr. Caesar. I'll call you a taxi. If you don't mind, I'm gonna get some sleep.
Well, that night, I didn't get a minute's sleep. I kept turning over in my mind. I got a hold of maybe the greatest act in history. Me, Irving Caesar, retired agent. But how do I convince Johnny Carson I'm not a crazy man? Well, the next morning, I put on my most sincere suit, and I head for Burbank. This was a bad mistake. I spent the whole day in one waiting room after another. Nobody remembered Irving Caesar. Not even some of the people who were working there because of me. Nobody gave me a tumble. Finally, the NBC receptionist gives me the name of one of the talent coordinators who might be able to fit me in for a few minutes, a lady named Shirley Stone. Now, I expect to be thrown out of my ear, but it turns out she's willing to listen, so I give it to her.
Now, let's see if I understand this. You are a psychic.
No, I'm not. It's this gal, Lee Lorimer.
Oh.
She's the one who can get the spirit of Al Jolson to appear on the Carson Show. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm telling you, last night I saw and spoke with Al Jolson. You do know who Al Jolson was?
Certainly.
Well, he wants to make one comeback appearance, and because we were good friends when he was alive, he asked me to try to set it up.
We always audition all our acts, you know, Mr. Caesar. Unless they're interview only, then we do like to have a conference with the writers.
I don't know if I could get them for a conference.
Why don't you leave me your card, and if we can put something together, I'll call you.
Nah. Listen, I've been an agent 42 years before I retired, and I know a brush off when I hear it. Look, you think I'm a crackpot? Okay, suppose I am. But just suppose I'm not. Just suppose there is a way to present the spirit of Al Jolson on nationwide television. And suppose it goes on to Tom What's-His-Name Show or Merv Griffin, when you could have had it on the Carson Show.
Mr. Caesar, I'm not the only one who decides on guests. Johnny has to approve of them, of course. I'll try to get word to him, and if he wants me to pursue it, I'll call you. All right?
All right. Here's where you can reach me.
We'll return to the incredible narration of Irving Caesar in a minute.
Yeah, it's probably going to have to be about a minute. Time is a wasting, as we've got three wonderful tales and fun and facts. Yay. And that was part
Hello?
Of Christ. Hello, gentlemen. Yeah.
You order number 7? Hello?
I think we have the drive-thru here.
Hello? Number 7? Blue car.
Yeah, you got number through. 7 for you.
Oh, wait. You're here I am. My mute was on. I was doing all this chatting. And I wasn't saying a word. Go ahead, Gar, laugh. It's your turn. Oh, my. How many fun times?
You drive through.
I was just saying, if there's Al Jolson had an ego the size of California, if there's one guy that would have enough ego to do something like this, it would be Al Jolson.
Now here, this raised a really, and I'll say it really quick, this raised an odd point for me was, okay, so we know copyright material, you know, is a no-no, but they're using the name presence and name strength of Johnny Carson in their little radio thing. I wonder if there's anything about that where Johnny goes, hey, man, don't be using my name, see?
It could be, but, you know, here's the thing. Unless you've trademarked your name, you can't do much about it. Now, I have one, you know, I have these crazy shirts. Well, I have this crazy rock and roll shirt. And I was wearing it in a volunteer camp. He said, why is Chuck Berry's name spelled wrong? And it was. Oh. All the guys are right with Chuck Berry's. Well, we looked up and Chuck Berry actually did did trademark his name. So without paying him some kind of royalty, you couldn't put the name Chuck Berry on that shirt.
So your Chuck Berry has a silent Q.
Yeah, well, it's spelled really weird. It's like maybe an Indian, the way the Indian version would have spelled Chuck Berry, I guess. B-R-A-H, something like that, you know.
A-N-Q-U-7-5-3,
something like that. But, yeah.
Okay.
It's like you can say the name of a product. You can say the name of the product, but you can't have a product necessarily in your shot, you know.
Yeah.
It is so crazy. I don't like the rules.
Too many rules. Anyway, let's get back to our presentation from Crisis. You ain't heard nothing
shadows.
Yet. Yeah, and Dark Shadows.
You know where that came from, right? You know where that came from, right? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Yeah, one of his
songs.
The first talkie.
Al kind of ad-libbed that in there. That's kind of, he played a song. He said, you ain't heard nothing yet, as everybody was applauding. And so that's where that line comes from.
Yep. And here is
the
that
singer.
Episode of Crisis with that self-same title. You ain't heard nothing.
Now, back to tonight's story.
Well, 2 days go by after I went to NBC, and finally, Friday morning, I get a phone call from Miss Stone. She says Carson is intrigued by the idea, but wants to make sure it pays off. I got to get Lee Lorimer to make Jolson appear in a rehearsal hall the following Monday morning. I get in touch with Lee, and she's willing to try it. So Monday morning, she and I and Miss Stone and another guy from the network are sitting in this big barn of a rehearsal studio. Introductions are made all around, and this network guy keeps looking nervously at his watch. Yeah, Miss Stone, she's all no nonsense this morning.
All right, Miss Lorimer, if you'll start whatever it is you do, please.
I'm trying. I think I...
I'm coming.
Here he is.
I'm coming, for my head is bending low. Hey there, ladies and gents, stick around, because you ain't heard nothing yet.
Good grief.
Well, I see my old friend Irving Caesar here and lovely Lee Lorimer, but I haven't had the pleasure of you other folks.
Jolie, this is Shirley Stone of the Johnny Carson Show.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Shirley. Too bad you weren't around 30 years ago.
It looks like... It sounds like him. I can't quite make out his face.
Irving, tell you what. See that piano over there? Let's give him a little swanny and see. Come on, you remember how it goes.
Sure, Al. Only I never accompanied a ghost before.
Oh, nothing to it. Hit it, Irving. Swanee, how I love you, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. I'd give the world to be back where the folks in the D-I-X are, even though my mammy is waiting for me, praying for me down by the...
Stop! That's enough. Mr. Brindaman has fainted. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, like I told you, you ain't heard nothing yet.
Well, I guess the word got to Johnny Carson about what happened Monday in the rehearsal hall. Because the next day, Lee Lorimer calls me and asks me to come over and advise her about signing a contract with NBC. How about that? I'm in the agent business again. After the legal beagle took off, Lee and I have a cold one and relax. And for me, there's nothing left to do except tune in on the Carson Show the next Friday night and watch the biggest surprise in the history of showbiz. But Lee is getting nervous now, and she's got a lot of questions.
You know, this is not the kind of thing I ever really wanted to do at all.
I don't need this kind of publicity.
What do you mean? You're going to have everyone in the country after you to bring back their loved ones.
But it doesn't work that way. The deceased party has to want to come through. And there's something else.
What's that?
Well, remember I told you that all the spirits of people are like switchboards that I can plug into?
Yeah.
But it's not always perfect. I mean, I can't be sure where in a life
I... Listen, honey. You're batting 1,000 so far. All you got to do is bring Jolie in sharp and clear next Friday when they tape the Carson show, and you got it made. Well, whoever's handling publicity for NBC really pulls out all the stops. I'm sure you've seen and heard those cute little 10-second teaser promos, the one that go, Johnny has the strangest guest in or out of the world coming Monday. They leak a little information to the trades, and boy, I'm busy fielding phone calls from everywhere. Meanwhile, we got meetings. Meetings with the producer, meetings with the director, meetings even with the music arranger, who's going nuts because we don't know what Jolson might want to sing. And Miss Stone, she's got to have a meeting, too.
Naturally, we want to have all the loose ends tied up before we tape. Now there's the question of payment. Actors willing to have Jolson's fee paid to a charitable organization if he'll designate one. I mean, assuming there's no use for money in, on the other... Oh, well, I guess that's silly. I'm sorry, we've never had a guest who wasn't living.
You know, it's all new to me, too, Miss Stone.
Oh, and Mr. Brenderman sent me a mail to be
Brenderman?
Sure to...
That's the guy who fainted?
Yes. He's worried that Mr. Jolson might sing Old Black Joe. He feels that would possibly be offensive to black viewers. I mean, in view of the lyrics to the song, so could we, I mean, if you're in touch with Mr. Jolson before we take it, you'll just...
I'll try to get word to him.
Great. Now, what else was there? Oh, now, this is super important. We can't have him doing a number in blackface. I mean, for obvious reasons.
I get the feeling there's no burnt cork in heaven, or wherever he comes from.
Well, that's another thing. Johnny is going to have representatives from three faiths on hand to witness Jolson's appearance and offer commentary after he, dematerializes?
Sort of like Eric Severide after a political talk?
I wouldn't know. That's on CBS. Now, the last thing I have here is a bio on Jolson. Would you check it with him to see if it's accurate?
Look, Miss Wood, I may not be talking to him again until I kick the bucket. Why don't you let me read what you got? Mm-hmm. Born in St. Petersburg, Russia in 1886. Named Asa Jolson. Yeah, that's correct. Died in 1950 following a tour of Korea entertaining American servicemen. Yeah, that's right. His dad was a cantor in a synagogue.
Well, we have that.
And he started singing when he was just a little kid.
No, we didn't have that. Now, wait, let me write that down.
Sounds like you're going to do kind of a eulogy.
Well, we're going to treat this thing with plenty of dignity.
You know, I don't think Jolie would want it that way. He was no stuffed shirt, you know. He was one fun-loving guy.
Oh, and Ed McMahon had a wonderful idea. Now, can we get Mr. Jolson to close by singing the anniversary song?
Oh, how we danced on the night.
Yes, yes, for the sentimental impact.
Well, I don't know. Like I say, if he comes through before the show, I can ask him.
Well, that's all I have. Thank you so much, Mr. Caesar. And we're holding two tickets for you.
Well, finally Friday night arrives, and Lee Lorimer and me are in a special guest lounge, just the two of us. It's about 15 minutes before showtime, and I'll admit it, I'm sweating. Well, there goes the warm-up.
Mr. Caesar, I'm scared.
Yeah, join the club.
I've never tried to go into a trance under these conditions.
Well, just remember, they're taping this. It's not live.
Maybe I should have tried to ignore Mr. Jolson.
He was always a pretty tough guy to ignore.
Look. What if I can't do it?
Hey, don't start that now.
There are so many variables.
Tell you what you ought to do. Make your contact right now.
No. No, I couldn't hold it that long. I'd knock myself out.
Just to sort of be sure that Al is ready.
Well, maybe I should. All right.
I'll get the lights.
I'm ready. I'm ready for Al... Jolson. Come in, Mr. Jolson. Please, Mr. Jolson.
Hey, what do we got here? Who's this taking shape?
Hey, so what am I doing? It's a kid. Get out of here, kid. Hey, Lee, snap out of it. You got the wrong guy. Lee.
Hey, I'm scared. What do you want?
What do you want? Where am I?
Oh, no, no. She got the wrong guy. What's your name, kid?
Hey, Sir Yorison.
Okay, folks, backstage, please. 5 minutes to pay.
Asa, we don't want you. I mean, we do want you, but we want you in about 25 years, after you've changed your name to Al Jolson. So that's why I'm a little low tonight, Pally, to tell you the truth.
That is, without a doubt, the biggest cock and bull story I ever heard.
Thanks.
I mean, that's a crock. You want another beer?
Nah.
I'll be right back. Time to turn on Carson.
Forget it.
Forget it? Why?
Tonight's the night we were going to be on. They scrubbed the taping when they found out we couldn't produce Al Jolson. So tonight, it's just a rerun.
In a minute, the names of tonight's players and a scene or two from next week's Crisis. Tonight, Crisis presented You Ain't Heard Nothing Yet, featuring John Roeder as Irving Caesar, Lee Posh as Lee Mortimer, Pat French as Shirley Stone, and as Al Jolson, Mr. Russ Mooney. Script and production by yours truly, Jim French. Our engineer is Carney Barton, and the program is produced at Audio Recording Incorporated in Seattle.
No, wait, what? It wasn't really Al?
Join us at this same time next Thursday night when the Golden West Radio Network again presents Crisis.
I'm flabbergasted. I thought it was really Al.
This is radio, Dale.
I feel cheated.
I'm never flabbergasted.
I feel cheated.
Well, in that case, you should get a moral so you don't feel so cheated.
Oh, yeah, that'll help. Oh, goodness. Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The best medium I've ever met was in the form of a half-price sale.
Well, I'd rather run into a medium than a large.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Yes, it was. Apologize for that.
The form of a half-price sale. Well, that's where they meet you in the middle, right?
Yep.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So another dead guy who's not really dead, but yeah, but no, but...
No, he was dead.
No.
That guy was dead.
Was dead.
He was dead.
Yeah. Can't keep a dead man down. Yep.
You can with a shovel.
Mm-hmm. These guys are neither shovel too.
Or a cricket bat if you're Sean.
Now the CBS Radio Workshop. Shovels.
Yes. A shovel to the forehead. And take out a zombie.
Are you wearing a boot to the head?
Boot to the head. Oh my gosh, that's great stuff.
I love boot to the head.
I should bring that on one day.
I use it on HH. It's funny.
It's hysterical.
It is.
I love when he gets the maid. Oh, I don't want nothing. Book of the head.
Somebody got a double.
And unfortunately, even the cat got one. That's too bad for the cat. But the cat. Yeah. Book of the head.
Poor kitty. There'll be no head booting of kitties around my watch. That's for sure.
That is just such a funny skit.
And a fun song.
My head.
Yep. And a fun song.
Hold on, radio.
Yep. Hold on, radio.
Hold on, radio.
Indeed. Well, then we should probably play some. We're going to wrap it up with a very good series, CBS Radio Workshop.
Tribute to man's imagination, yes.
Good, because this title has...
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, this title has me absolutely intrigued. When the Mountain Fell.
You don't fall on the mountain. The mountain falls on you.
Yeah,
that's right. And it
hides. Oh, yeah.
And
we have an ending.
Well, we sure. Why not? Let's just jump right in. What is the air date? Do we got it?
October
26,
1956.
A.D.
A.D. A.M. After mountain. After mountain.
Deborah, even the word has a singing sound. It rings softly and a little sadly here inside your head. Then it fades and disappears, just as the valley itself has disappeared. Deborah. Once its pastures were a beautiful green color, even as early as May. There were all kinds of tiny mountain some whiter than snow, bluer than the sky, bright orange and purple and yellow. How beautiful it was in those days. How very beautiful. But all that was almost 20 years ago. Almost 20 years ago, before the mountain.
CBS Radio Workshop, dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind. Tonight, a version for listening of a French novel called When the Mountain Fell, written by C.F. Ramus, adapted for the workshop by Draper Lewis, with an original musical score composed and conducted by Lawrence Rosenthal.
My name is Plon, old Plon. Once I was called Pierre when my back was straight and strong, and my flocks as many as the stars that pasture up there in the evening sky. Pierre, all that is past. Now I am old Plon, who sits here by the well and gossips with the women of the village, or carves little animals of wood for the children. Do you see that path to the right of the church? That is the path the men of our village would follow each spring, driving their cattle and goats up to the pastures for the summer. There were so many men from our village living up there in the valley that last terrible year when the mountain fell. There was Nendas, who walked with a limp, Justin, the baker's son. There were the three brothers named Carut and Antoine and Seraphim.
Antoine, my cup is empty again. Is there more coffee?
Antoine, who shared a little cabin with Seraphim. He's the one I want to tell you about. Antoine.
Antoine!
What? Oh, I'm sorry, Seraphim.
And what face were you looking for among the flames? We've only been on the mountain a few weeks, and already you're lonesome for your Therese. Anyone would think you were never going to see your young bride again. Is it such an awful thing to have me for company?
Well, no. No, of course not, my old friend.
Please, some more coffee. Besides, I would like you to go down to the village on Saturday. I have some cheese for you to take to my sister, Philomene. And you can stay over till Monday or Tuesday, and then come back.
Many thanks from both of
you. Ah. Nothing. Now, it's time for bed.
Well, I've never heard that sound before.
It's been happening for the past 3 nights, but you're too heavy a sleeper to hear it. It's nothing. Unless you believe the stories they tell about the mountain, about the Devil's Tower.
I've heard some of the stories.
Old Plon will tell you the devil himself lives there with his wife and children. He will say,
now he is quiet, there is no noise, but soon he will get bored and say to his imps, you there, get out the bowls.
They will hurl great stones at the devil's ninepin, and the noise echoes like thunder through the mountain. The story's true, just ask old Prawn. See? They begin again.
It seems so much louder this time.
He will also tell you that anyone who dies on the mountain lives on through all eternity, haunting the place where he has died and calling in the night to his loved ones to join him. He can make the little hairs in the back of your neck rise with some of his tales.
The sound is getting louder. It doesn't seem to be stopping this time.
It will stop. It always stops.
Well, did you feel it? The cabin moved as though a giant hand had reached down to shake it.
Get your lantern. We must go outside and turn the cattle loose.
We can't go outside. The rocks are falling everywhere.
That's what. Stay near the walls where the beams are heaviest. It'll be safer there.
Oh, dear God. Protect us.
Edward, help me. Get me free.
Jonathan!
Jonathan!
First, it sounded like a great storm in the mountains, as though the thunder of all the world was speaking as one up there. And then there was the crash as the Devil's Tower hit the valley below to bury Deberons and our men forever. But it was not forever. The mountain would not have it so.
Mother? Good morning. I brought you over some fresh eggs from the farm.
Oh.
How did you sleep last night?
Oh, well, I woke up once when I heard the storm, but then I remembered that you'd closed the windows before you left. Here, I'll take the eggs.
Mother, why is the church bell ringing so slowly this morning? Well, there's a ceremony, a special mass today. But come sit here by the stove, and I'll make coffee. With a baby coming, we must talk about the clothes he will need. I still have a trunk in the attic with some of your clothes in it, and when Seraphim comes home, he can help. When Seraphim comes home...
Mother? Mother, you're suddenly so pale. What is it?
It's nothing. Nothing, what? Dear. I didn't sleep well last night. The storm upset me.
Fiddlemen, there is. There is no one left alive in Deberon. One of the woodmen, little boy, just came down from the mountain. He says there are only great clouds of dust and the rocks. He says that...
She doesn't know.
I wanted to tell her, but not yet, not this soon.
What's happened? What are you trying to keep from me, Mother? Mother, tell me, Catherine. Catherine, please.
The mountain has fallen.
The mountain is... What mountain?
The Devil's Tower.
Fallen where?
On Deborah.
And the men? And the men?
There is.
What?
Sit here on the bed.
But the mountain just doesn't... A mountain just doesn't fall down like that. A mountain can't fall down. And Antoine, where is he? Antoine, my husband. Antoine!
Nearly 2 months went by. The scientists came from the city to study the glacier, looking for any fresh cracks which would cause another fall. Then the engineers to measure the avalanche and change their maps of the valley. And always, always the people came. The curious people who climbed the great pile of rock that covered the valley of Deberons. But they found nothing. Cabins, animals, and men had disappeared completely under the stones, and Deberons lay as dead beneath the Devil's Tower for 2 months, or nearly 2 months, until one morning. One morning, he got his head out.
Help me.
It was nearly 2 months after the avalanche when he crawled out of a hole.
Please, Someone help me.
There was no one there to help him. First his head squeezed between two stones, out into the daylight. And he struggled and fought and dragged the rest of his body up, up, towards the sun.
Mayor says we'll be given new pastures in the spring.
And the money for the new livestock, when can we expect that? Pass me your bowl again.
The wind is rising. It may storm tonight.
Dubois, can't we move down into the village now that our cattle are gone? Your dog is barking again. It's so lonely up here.
We will buy more cattle somehow. And why is he always my dog whenever he begins to bark? We can't afford to move this year, and besides...
Dubois, wait. Did you hear something?
I heard my dog barking and the sound of the wind in the trees.
Be quiet, you fool, and listen. There. I heard it again.
That was a cry. Someone in pain. I'll take the ladder.
Raybor, don't go out there, please.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Raybor, it could be them. They can come back, you know. I've heard talk about it in the village. Anyone who is killed on the mountain can't come back.
Who have you been listening to, old Flaw? Let me open the door, Marie.
No, no.
Marie, get back.
What are you talking about? Are you mad? And stop waving that gun around in my face.
I saw him with my own two eyes standing at the door. His face was white and shrunken like a skull. And his voice, a voice from the grave.
Now perhaps you will believe old Paul when he tells you that the dead are restless there on the mountain. That the dead will return to seek their own.
But, my son, it might have been your imagination. Some sort of image you thought you saw.
No, Father. I saw him walking down the path towards the village. I saw the ghost of Antoine Paul, who is dead. Dead!
Wait, please. We must be certain before we act.
Emil saw him on the path not more than 10 minutes ago. He'll be in the village at any minute.
And who knows how many more of the dead will follow him.
Antoine Paul died with all the other men of the village 2 months ago, but tonight he is walking again.
What are you saying about my husband?
He has been seen at the door of Marie Raybor's cabin and on the path leading to the village. Antoine.
He's the first of the dead to walk from Desbarances. Father. You must help us. The church must protect our village.
How can I protect you against something I haven't seen? How do I know that this is true?
Look there, at the end of the path from Deveron.
Father, if you won't try to stop him, I will.
No, Raybor, no.
Throw my arm.
No.
Oh, my arm.
Please, Raybor, put away your gun. Let him alone.
Antoine, it's Therese. Antoine, come to me. Come to me, my husband.
Therese. Therese.
Antoine.
Go to him, my daughter. It is your husband. The dead do not reach out for the living beneath the shadow of the cross of our Lord.
Real nice, but it's not over yet. That's just part one of When the Mountain Fell. I saw Don go
boom. So there was an avalanche, and everybody that got caught in it, they're all dead or they're a zombie.
They're all buried alive.
Woo-hoo. See, I like a nice, happy story. Such as this.
We're going out on a pleasant note this weekend.
Yep.
Yeah, we are.
And what could be more pleasant than CBS Radio Workshop? I got to stop myself so I don't say Mystery Theater, at least until it's the right after that.
Just I know.
Tomorrow.
Yep. Just remember, Dave, this program is dedicated to bands. And just remember, this program is dedicated to man's imagination. And
the theater of the mind.
Was the workshop, the CBS Radio Workshop, was it in competition with another broadcasting entity?
Not really. They were just, and it was all sustained by the CBS network. So they did a lot of experimental things, shows in there, and things like that. And very high quality, using up to three sound effect people's for persons, Foley artists at a time for some shows. CBS poured a lot of money. It really wasn't in competition with anything. Escape had already gone off the air. Suspense was still running. But this kind of was used to maybe kind of, in a sense, replace Escape, although there were some different imaginative things that went on in these shows here. So.
Yep. Pretty cool stuff. From long ago and not so far away, or far away and not so long ago.
Or something like that.
Something like that. We might as well wrap up CBS Radio Workshop, When the Mountain Fell. Cue the goat.
Antoine, is it really you?
I'm not sure. Look in the mirror. Was my face always that small without whiskers?
Always as handsome. How do you feel?
Oh, I could sleep the clock around several more times.
Oh, I hated to wake you, but the mayor and the village council...
Ah, yes, I was summoned to tell my story before the august presence of the mayor himself.
Antoine, I have something to tell you. Something... very important.
I have so many things to tell you. Things I've held here inside me for 2 long months. Therese, let me sit down for a moment.
I'll go call the doctor.
No, I'm all right. Therese, I'm going back. I'm going back up to Deborah's.
Oh, let me tell the mayor that you can't see him now.
But I must see him now. I have something to tell him about the mountain. I must see him. There is still someone under the avalanche at Deborah's. Someone alive.
To your health, Antoine, and welcome home.
Your Honor. Father, please. You must believe me when I tell you that Seraphim is alive. He's up there under the rocks that cover Deborah's. You must help me find him.
Antoine, sit down. You have had a terrible experience. It's a miracle even you survived.
But two of us survived, too.
We can talk about that later, Antoine. You said you would tell us how you got out.
And you tried to shoot me, eh, Reborn?
No
matter. You are an old soldier, and it's not surprising from the way I looked. Thin as a scarecrow, my face all shrunken in the color of a vegetable that you grow in the cellar away from the light.
My secretary will take down your story as you tell it, Antoine.
Tell it? What is there to tell? I was caught in an avalanche. A heavy beam kept the rocks from me. For a long time after it passed, I just lay there with my eyes shut. I wanted to scream, but I knew that no one would hear. It was days and days later when I heard it. A sound, so tiny that at first I thought it was only part of my daydreaming. Drip, like that. Then drip, drip, louder and faster. And then I filled it with my hand, a tiny trickle of water running by me into the ground. And I knew if I could follow it far enough, I would find the sunlight again.
It was draining through cracks from the glacier.
Yes, through cracks that could be followed. I dug with my hands, with my very fingertips, and the blood ran down my arms faster than the stream itself. It took a long, long time.
7 weeks.
And 5 days. It doesn't seem humanly possible.
That's why you must go back up the mountain with me. Seraphim is trying to free himself, too. I know he is. All we have to do is go and find him. Reborn, will you go with me?
Antoine, it's too dangerous to walk on the rocks now. The avalanche is still shifting and moving.
You say no. Freddy, Jan.
No.
Surely you will go.
No.
You knew Seraphim, knew him and loved him as I love him.
Well, since the rain last night, the path up the mountain is bad. If we could wait until...
Wait while Seraphim calls for help. If none of you are men enough to go back up the mountain, then I'll go alone. I don't need you, any of you!
Antoine, wait!
I wanted to go with him. It's just that after he's slept tonight, perhaps he'll realize in the morning that Seraphim could not be alive.
Or perhaps Antoine himself is not really alive.
Slept another 12 hours, Mother. I'm going in and give him something to eat. What was the gossip in the village this morning?
Old Plon has scared them all to death with his tales about the walking dead.
Do you believe that Antoine is dead?
I believe what you believe, Therese.
Well, he walked to me beneath the cross of our Lord. And here, in this room, he held me in his arms and he kissed me. He is my husband and he's real and alive.
It has been a difficult time for all of us. Poor Seraphim.
This morning I'm going to tell him about our baby. That will help, I know. I'll tell him while he's having his coffee. Hand me the tray. Antoine?
I've heard the story about men who
do not care. Antoine is not dead. Father, tell them.
My friends, listen to this girl. What she says is the truth.
Antoine is sick. His mind is sick after being under those rocks week after week after week. He only imagines that Seraphim is alive.
How do we know that he hasn't come down here to take us back with him? Yeah. Back up there. Yeah. Old Claude says...
Well, let old Claude speak for himself. I want to hear what he says. Where are you? Where are you, old man? Now, you see? You see he's not even here. That's how important his story is. Why, he's probably in bed dreaming an old man's dreams. And while he is... Antoine is up there on the mountain and he needs help. Won't someone go with me to find him? Please!
There, above us, between those two rocks. That's Deborah's.
I could just sit, just for a moment. It's been a long time since I've climbed this far.
Why don't you wait here with me, Therese?
No.
Let the mayor and the others
go. No. I must go with them. You see, I have something to tell Antoine. Oh, I should have stayed by his bedside last night while he slept, and I didn't. Now I must make him understand. I must say to him, we are three. There is a child coming, and we need you. And I must tell him of the danger to this village if he is lost again.
I think we should move on. It's only another 3 hours until dusk.
No, you must not go on.
Plon, why have you come up here?
You are the wife. You are married to this man who has walked among us and called himself Antoine.
I won't listen to you. You're an evil old man.
I am an old man, yes. And I've climbed a long and difficult way to try to stop you from going up into the valley. Woman, take care. They may look as if they have bodies like us, but it is all trickery. There are certain nights, dark and moonless nights, when you can see them and hear them walking up and down, wailing and lamenting. They make a noise like the wind whistling over the top of a rock. Like a pebble rolling in a stream. Do not go up into that valley or you will be lost. All of you.
I will go on. No. Aren't any of you coming with me?
Do not go into that valley.
Very well. I'll go on alone.
should do something. There is nothing we can do. She will not come back. He grew lonely up there in the valley, under the rocks. He came back for her, and she went to him. We will never see her again. No matter how long you wait, she will not come back.
Please, dear God, help me find him. Help me. Antoine!
I am here, Seraphim. Soon, you will be free. Free, Seraphim.
Antoine!
No. No, go back. Go back.
Antoine, I've come for you. Take you home, Antoine. Antoine, don't run from me. I love you.
Go back. There's nothing you can do here. Go back, I tell you. Go back.
The sun will set soon. We cannot wait much longer.
The Lord save us.
I hate to believe that old Plon is right. We'll never see her again, and...
She should have been back long before this. What else can we believe?
I will still order a searching party. I'll tell the authorities in Zambro.
It's too late. It's all over now.
We'll discuss it further in the village. Plon, are you coming back with us? Old Plon?
There. Over there. In the valley. See? They're coming.
What are you talking about, you old fool?
The old man's eyes are playing tricks on him.
No, no. Now follow my finger. Over there. That speck of white. That is Antoine's shirt. And the blue is Therese's dress. You can see them moving down the path.
Ribor, call to them. See if they answer. Call Ribor as loudly as you can. Call their names.
Antoine! Antoine!
Shh! Be quiet and listen.
Hello! Hello! Hello!
Father, forgive me.
Forgive you?
I had to go up the Valley of Deverance again. I was sure Seraphim was still alive.
And what do you think now?
I don't know. When I came back to the village, I thought I heard his voice calling me. But it was like an echo in my head. An echo of the last words he spoke before the mountain fell. I don't know.
Now that you've returned, Antoine, the people of the village are no longer afraid. The people that you and Seraphim loved. The myth of the mountain is gone.
Yes, Father. God rest the soul of Seraphim.
Softly and a little sadly inside your head as you lean over the great empty space where there is nothing left anymore. And it is easy to see that nothing is left. In time, though, in still another 20 years, perhaps, the slow and patient brushwork of the growing moss will color the biggest boulders, while their cracks will give foothold to many kinds of flowers and ferns and small mountain shrubs with sturdy branches and thick leaves, their glossy berries swaying in the wind like little tinkling bells, and Deverance will live again.
You have been listening to the CBS Radio Workshop and When the Mountain Fell, written by C.F. Ramuse, adapted by Draper Lewis, with music composed and conducted by Lawrence Rosenthal. The workshop is produced and directed in New York by Paul Roberts. Barry Kroger was heard as Old Clon, Augusta Dabney as Therese, and Joe Helgeson as Antoine. Included in the cast were Jackson Beck, Peggy Allenby, Alice Uhrman, Joseph Julian, Abby Lewis, John Gibson, Ivor Francis, Joseph Boland, and Ruth Tobin. This is Bob Height inviting you to listen again next week when, from New York, the CBS Radio Workshop presents 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the story of the White House in Washington, D.C. Stay tuned now for 5 minutes of CBS News. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
As they should. That wraps up our tale from CBS Radio Workshop.
It does.
And as usual, there's probably something to be learned. Erie House Radio proudly presents another of Gar's fine morals of the story.
Yet you have to be careful about superstitions, or they could turn into super stitches.
Dramatic. Very dramatic.
There you go.
That was a dramatic moral.
Super stitches.
Yep, that's dramatic.
Yeah, that kind of gets my goat,
Is mine too.
When people are so misguided because of something they're following that doesn't have a basis in, say, fact, I don't know. And it could injure or hurt somebody.
But they're just simple mountain people. You can't kill
They're just
dead
simple
guy.
Mountain people.
You can't kill a dead guy.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
I wonder if it's legal to kill a dead guy if he's walking.
Well, if you can't kill a dead guy, then why the gun at all?
Would it be, does a dead guy have rights?
I don't know. The simple mountain folk know that water runs from high to low. They know, when it's hot and when it's cold, there's stuff going on. They look at the trees and go, well, they're changing color. It might be a new season coming on. There's some things that are just good old-fashioned common sense, but then this other stuff, wow. I get lost in that.
Yep.
Well, as long as you got your GPS, you can find your way home.
Yeah.
That's right. And my boinger.
I always follow the goat home.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Yeah, that guy.
So you're ready to ride off into the sunset there, girl.
Yeah. The coffin sound box is running well. That's a coffin-shaped sound box. Available at Target. I'm not selling, I'm just telling.
Wait. You have a horse inside your coffin?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It's a pretty big coffin.
It's a kick in the head. Bang Bark Pharmaceuticals presents...
Hello.
Brazilian...
I'm Mr. Ed.
There you go. Mr. Ed. Yeah.
I wonder which horse that
My
is.
My horse doesn't have a name. My horse doesn't have a name.
Yeah. Snedley.
Brazilian mule headache tablets. It's a kick in the head. That's right.
Yep.
Ain't
a kick in the head for your kick in the head.
A kick in the head.
I know. Yeah. That's what I need sometimes. I mean, something. I mean relief. And that means a boot to the head. There you go.
Boot to the head.
Boot to the head.
There was a couple in that series. There was a sequel boot to the head skit, too, I think, or a song or something.
It was a
really?
Song, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think the song was just an audio song. You know, they did it for the record.
Yeah.
Huh.
The comedy troupe that did it had an interesting name that escapes me right now.
It's a Canadian group, I think.
Yes. That would make sense.
Well, so maybe their name was Powerful. Maybe their name was Powerful Donuts or something like that, since they were Canadian, eh?
No, I can find out their names right here if I did this right.
I like Powerful Donuts. That's a good name for a group.
Hold on.
Boot. Now, of course, it's going to bring up Boots Randolph, but the Frantics.
The Frantics.
Last Frantics. Will and Testament, Boot to the Head. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Nancy Sinatra, these boots are made for walking. Big Nazo, the boot squad.
Fairies wear boots.
Fairies wear boots.
Yeah, so there it
is. The Frantics. Mystery solved. I guess.
So many great things. You know, we had such great comedy growing up between television and even radio and then on the records as well. Such great comedy from different people.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these guys did nightclubs you never would have known about them if it hadn't been for the records.
See, okay. And when I was growing up, I had the luxury of seeing all the wealth of old TV because it would re-air in its syndication or whatever. And then in the 80s and 90s, early 80s, mid 80s, late 80s, you had stuff like, what was it called? One Day at a Time, about the three girls living, the mother got a divorce and the two girls. And they included a lot of canned laughter. And for some reason, a lot of the stuff they were shooting was not funny. There was a show about a restaurant called Alice. Not funny.
Is there a thing up there? I know we don't have time for it tonight, but it's about Henry Morgan, about laughter in the wheel.
In the wheel, not right now. That I know of.
There isn't. Okay. Oh, okay. I meant to send that up. But there's it's exactly what Gar's talking about. How he's talking about how. Most people we hear on television laughing have died.
Yeah.
Well, but did they die laughing?
Another great one was Three's Company. I did not find funny. They put canned laughter in it, but I was like, I got nothing.
Yep.
You know,
there's something not so funny. Tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern at CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Dead Come Alive, and that's till 8 o'clock. What happens then? Quickly.
Horrible Horror, starring Guy like, oh, blah, 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 you all. See you there.
That was well done. And that's right. Mm-hmm. We'll see you tomorrow night, 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him, too.
When next we meet in Frankenstone.
What?
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it? I can dig it.
Good night.
There you go. Yeah.
There it is.
There we go.
We got Thunder Boomers here.
As the executor of Mr. Muldoon's estate, I have been empowered to read Mr. Muldoon's last will and testament.
Well, get on with it. The bar's open soon.
Oh, poor dear Arthur.
Oh, there, Jenny. God help
Predictably boring.
I never Jenny will, but web. I find her man.
If we are all seated, I shall proceed with the reading.
I knew it.
I, Arthur Durham Muldoon, being of sound mind and body...
That's a laugh.
...do hereby divide up my considerable estate as follows. To my overly emotional sister, Jenny...
Jenny, darling, he's talking about us.
...who grubbed with her husband, Hank, grubbed for everything they could get from me, and then cried crocodile tears when I needed sympathy.
What?
To Jenny, I leave a boot to the head.
Jenny, are you okay?
And another boot to her winty husband, Hank.
Ow!
Ah, but still, you are my sister. You have both admired my Rolls Royce, and since I no longer need it...
Oh, dear Arthur, he's too kind.
I bequeath another boot to the head.
What? Ow!
And one more for the win.
Ow!
Next to my alcoholic brother...
Hey, I don't want no boot to the head.
To dear Hedge, who has never worked a day in his drunken life...
I'm covering up my head.
I leave my wine cellar and three crates of my finest whiskey.
Really?
And a boot to the head.
Oh!
And another for Jenny in the wind.
Oh! Oh!
Next, to my know-it-all nephew, Ralston...
This is so predictable.
I leave a boot to the head.
Oh, I knew it.
And one for Jenny in the wind.
Oh! Oh!
This takes care of family obligations. And now to Mrs. Mulroy.
Oh, I don't want nothing.
Who took care of me faithfully these many, many years. Who cared, made me laugh, brought me tea.
Oh, I didn't mind.
To Mrs. Mulroy, I bequeath a boot to the head.
Oh!
And one for Jenny in the wind.
Ah! Oh!
And so to my cat Mittens, I leave my entire vast boot to the head. And finally, to my lawyer, who has helped me on this will, I leave not a boot to the head, but a rabid Tasmanian devil to be placed in his trousers. And I leave my entire estate of $10 million to the people of Calgary so they can afford to move somewhere decent.
Definitely Canadian.
Is that it?
That's it?
That's disgraceful.
There's one last thing for everyone.
Cover your heads, everybody.
I leave everyone a lifetime supply of ice cream.
Ice cream?
Ice cream.
Ice cream. That's all?
That's all.
Well, what flavor is it?
Boot to the head.
Good stuff.
What flavor is it? Boot to the head.
Yep. Comedy classic. I couldn't resist. When you guys brought this up, I'm like, oh, I got to. I have to find it.
Yeah. Good old boot to the head. I think my roommate showed it to me, and I was like, what is this? Absolutely hilarious. Boot to the head.
I believe the first time I heard that was on Good Old Dr. D.
Really?
Yeah, that's where I heard it.
Yeah. I ran across it first time on the YouTubes, I think. And it was hard to find back in the early days of the YouTubes. But they used real tubes. I'm going to duck out of here then.
Hang on. Chat out a few seconds. I'm picking up the song, you know, just about ready to upload.
Oh, okay.
So we just see Chad just another minute longer here. Might as well give the full treatment. The full treatment.
Yeah.
Except this thing is not cooperating.
Yeah, it was really crazy that when you mentioned the anniversary thing, that all of a sudden it's like, wait a second, I got married in September in 86.
It's easier to forget when it's been a long time. I honestly do not remember my anniversary from my first marriage. I erased those years right out of my head.
I do because it was the coldest day in the history of Ohio on that day. It was minus 19 degrees below zero without wind chill, and there was wind.
Oh,
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that. The wind chills were like negative 50, negative 60, something like that.
What a day to remember. That puts a real pin in the tail of the donkey there, so to speak.
It'll be a cold day in hell before I... Oh.
Oh, it is. Well, never mind. Never mind.
Yeah.
All right. Hang on. I got it all ready. I'm just loading it up here. But, yeah.
Oh, the guy I was talking with tech support out of India for NVIDIA, he so wanted to hang up. I was like, oh, just wait one more. It'll load in just a second. My computer is being so rotten. And then finally it worked. But he wanted to hang up. I was like, oh, no, wait, just wait.
Like, you're going to fix this.
And I'm glad he did. Yeah.
All right. So it is just processing. It'll be just hopefully a few seconds here.
Yep.
Stop.
No error messages.
No, not yet.
No, I had to disconnect. I've got 5 peripheral hard drives. I had to disconnect all those.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
People talking in movie shows. People smoking in bed. People voting Republican. Give them a boot to the head. The car, politicians who can't think, the salesman who won't leave me alone, the waiter who forgot my drink.
Boots to the head! Boots to the head! Boots to the head! Boots to the head!
The Frantics.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No,
I find them very soothing.
Do you?
As long as you don't
put a boot on your hand and follow their instructions, you're okay.
No, that's what makes it soothing.
Oh. And then you pass out.
No. Yeah, just okay. The comical release of angst and anger. That's why I always like slapstick. That's why I always like slapstick.
They should have done more slapstick on Three's Company. If they were hitting each other over the head with baseball bats, I'd be laughing.
Their slapstick was John Ritter tripping over the couch. That was John. You know.
Yeah.
That got old in, 2 seconds? Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, and their comedy was like, oh, God. It was a lot of groans. A lot of groans.
But they had a laugh track, and I was like, I'm not laughing at that. I refuse. I'm not laughing at that.
And then you had Don Knotts mugging it up for a while.
Yeah, that didn't go too far either.
No, it gets old. You can do that so much.
Yeah.
So,
Although they had a laugh track on the Dick Van Dyke Show, but I found the Dick Van Dyke Show to be kind of funny.
Yeah,
they didn't have a real audience for Dick Van Dyke Show. They didn't have a real audience for Dick Van Dyke.
I could be wrong.
I don't know, but
I've been wrong before.
The thing is, some of the things that he did created such a reaction that. You know, like Lucy, some of the things she did was created such a reaction. And we know that they had a live audience. I think Dick Van Dyke had a live audience because of the reactions to some of the stuff that like when Laura, when Dick was dreaming and Laura came out of the closet with all those nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody in the world was expecting that. And the reaction the audience gave was, that's not something you could have canned.
Yeah, that was right. That erupted. That absolutely erupted. And it was such a great show. You had Rosemary. You had Maury Amsterdam. You had
Maury Amsterdam, yeah.
On occasion, Carl Reiner would pop in there.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a foil, you had the Fred somebody. I can't remember his name.
I just didn't care for the neighbor dentist. I could have lived without Jerry
Paris. He actually, especially after the first year, directed a lot of the episodes too. So, and he went on to do a lot more directing. He went on to do a lot more directing, like Dick Martin did more directing than he did Rowan and Martin. You know.
Yeah. I found on Pluto a channel that shows all the old Ed Sullivan shows.
And really? That one I'll have to check out.
Oh, they just added it. It's an Ed Sullivan channel, and it looks like a series of, like, videos they made to sell, like, discs or tapes back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing what's recorded there. You've got some really old Rowan and Martin long before Laughing.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm.
And their act, to me, it looked like old vaudeville or burlesque. More than vaudeville, they were almost burlesque.
I haven't found any yet, but supposedly they even did some hosting of the old Colgate Comedy Hour. Now, I have not found any of their shows yet.
God, they would have been really young there. Jesus.
Yeah, they would have.
Because they were what, maybe in their 40s for Laughing? So that's late 60s. So, yeah, I mean, they could go back that far easily.
Yeah, I just recently posted an image of the flying fickle finger of fate, which was definitely a lot of fun.
Yep. Oh, there was so much going on in the world, and you could make fun of anything, and nobody freaked out, you know?
Well, because it was so crazy.
It was right on the cusp.
You couldn't take it seriously.
Because
nobody took it seriously.
The Smothers Brothers came in, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, you can't do that, but... Just a year before, they were doing it on Laughing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smothers Brothers just got into a lot of trouble fighting network, not just the censors, but the network itself.
Yeah.
And that's what you, I mean, because when they were still a top 20 show when they got fired, when they got canned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were a good show, too. They had good guests. And.
Oh, yeah.
But they had an anti-war message, and the president of CBS was a good friend of LBJ's, and LBJ didn't want that in there.
Right.
I don't know. Mom always liked you better.
Yeah, best. Mom liked you best.
Mom liked you best. You lower
Mom
your
like
voice.
Does.
Mom liked you best.
He
had such a sad face for that. That was perfect the way they played that.
Yeah.
The
Laughing show happened, and I'm a little bit younger than you guys. I loved it. I didn't understand half of it because a lot of it was aimed at adults. But to see Artie Johnson on the tricycle and fall over, and it was funny.
Or trying to slide next to Ruth Buzzy on the bench.
Oh, Ruth Buzzy on the bench. Oh my! And I didn't understand it. I see it now. I'm like, my gosh, they showed that on TV because he was a masher.
He was.
Oh,
but
man.
She took care of herself,
Yeah, but she
mashed
him back.
Purse.
She mashed him back. Yeah,
that purse was deadly.
It was just so funny. And the sad thing is this. The folks of today, the now generation, they got no clue about Laughing. And it's just amazingly funny.
But I don't think the kids today would really understand that kind of silliness.
Right.
Because really it was a product of its era.
Right. Right. And what was it? Andy Williams specials. Love those. They were lots of funny. There was song. There was stuff. That stuff doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I watched Andy Williams' show a lot. I did.
Yes.
I did, too. Yep. And everybody had that I knew had the Andy Williams Christmas album.
Yeah, I have it.
Everybody in the world had that album. That one, yeah. I think there was a Perry Como one. It seemed like everybody in the world had it.
I've got that one, too. And again, I will reinforce. I'm a Santa Claus Christmas. That's my deal. And there's a lot of different things that are in there. But basically, they are just all-around great albums. The thing I remember the most about the Andy Williams thing, as a kid, I loved the Cookie Bear. What is the Cookie Bear?
You know, if you go to, I think it's Ray Stevens' page on YouTube, you can get the first episode of the Ray Stevens Show, and it's got Andy Williams on there with him, and they do one of the Cookie Bear sketches in there as well.
Yes, I remember that. That was. Yeah,
this is a
there's one where the Cookie Bear is dressed up as Andy, rings about
the
and
they had and they had Lulu, who was a regular, and the guest that night was Mama Cass Elliot, and
You mean as in To Sir with Love, Lulu?
Yep, To Sir with Love, Lulu was a regular on that summer replacement for Andy Williams, the Ray Stevens Show, which was I think partially produced by Andy Williams, so. He came on the first one and the last one of that season, as I remember.
You know, I hate to get political, but I was thinking back in that era, and I decided that we should all vote for Pat Paulson.
Remember
that? That's just being smart.
They had Pat Paulson on the Monkees. They had Pat Paulson on Laughing.
Talk about a deadpan. That guy was the best. His picture in the dictionary is next to the word deadpan.
I'm telling you, Buster Keaton's got nothing on Pat Paulson.
Yeah.
Exactly. Buster Keaton and Pat Paulson. There you go. Wow. I just loved his just funny stuff. And just great.
I remember when the Smothers Brothers did a comeback, and they brought Pat Paulson. And he started running for president again.
Right.
He says, the caucus, where'd he get that name? Off the bottom of an eye chart?
Oh, man. Yeah, I forgot he was on the Smothers Brothers show. That's true, yeah. So, yeah.
He had that kind of delivery that was just so
low-key
when it hit you.
He's a Midwestern guy. He was out of Detroit, and that's where he was appearing. That's where he did his stand-up. I think it was Tommy that found him and brought him on the show.
Wow.
Too great.
Tommy deserves a lot more credit for a lot of things than he ever got. As a matter of fact, we got a couple crises, and I got one in particular planned that Tommy Smothers comes and does for the Crisis show.
Oh, cool.
So we'll have Tommy Smothers on a radio show there.
Oh, cool.
That'll be good. Are you getting over a cold or just getting one, Dave?
I'm trying to get over one, man. Trying to get over one.
For those of you listening to me. Oh, go ahead.
I just said that's why my mic was on mute a few times and I forgot to turn it back on.
For those of you listening in the archives, sneak preview, we're starting to put Halloween together. I'm pretty sure I'm going to pull off some kind of a music night.
Okay.
All different kinds.
There are a lot of novelty songs out there, so
Not just some.
Yeah,
well,
we
try to
if
be
we
careful.
We could only use the novelty songs.
Right.
Yeah, if we could only use those, so we'd be.
There's so many, but I think I found a novel way to have a lot of music, not just the old time radio stuff. But some other things in there, too, for the holiday.
I just had to check. Halloween's on a Monday, so we're good. I am not on the Internet at all on Halloween Day.
I don't think we're going to be either. I think our last night is going to be the 30th, our annual War of the Worlds broadcast. Dave's got a good one for us.
Another different version.
Found another good one. This one will be unique.
Wouldn't it have been cool if Spike Jones and the City Slickers did a version of that?
Yeah.
Oh, that
I wish we could. I really wish we could play Jeff Wayne's musical version.
Yeah,
oh,
I wish we
so
could.
Cool. That would be so cool. It ends kind of chilling. It has a chilling ending rather than the. I mean, it ends in the typical way, but there's more to it that's kind of whoa.
And Richard Burton's narration throughout it is terrific.
Yep, Richard Burton narrates, and there were some pretty good songs. Some were a little odd, and the Sound of the Creatures was a little odd.
Yep.
I can't see that movie as a musical. It sounds kind of weird.
Rock.
It's rock.
Yeah.
There's like there's like one song for the crazy guy in the bunker.
You can find it on the YouTubes. It's there.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's there.
Yeah, there were popular musicians of the day that worked on it too. Like there's some guy from Yes and
the girl from No, the dog from Maybe.
I think the lead singer from Tin Lizzy. Rock band Tin Lizzy.
Yeah, I enjoy Tin Lizzy. That's good stuff.
Yep, no, don't mess with it.
Not as good as their diet album. They have the Thin Lizzy Lose 10 Pounds. It's great.
Oh, stop it. No, there's some good performers in it. And it's well put together. I used to listen to it. It was just right. It was two record albums that came on, two of them. So there were four sides, if you will.
Yeah, I had it on, two first cassettes and then two CDs. Later on.
Oh. Now, we had a Peaches. You remember Peaches? Anybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And ours was huge. It was at the Southgate USA Maple Heights. And that Peaches, when they started pimping, and this was like, what, late 70s, early 80s? When they started pimping this album coming out, they had huge things of the spaceships and stuff out in front of the store.
Yeah. It was amazing the promo that LPs got back in the day.
Yeah.
And then they died.
And then they died.
And then they came back.
Yep. Everything always comes back around.
It was weird. And this was several years ago on the passing of Andy Williams. Andy Williams lived to be in his 80s or 90s or whatever it was. And he passed away. And I was like, oh, man. And I went back and started listening to his stuff. And I was like, oh. The memories, they just flood back. Good, pleasant memories. Christmas memories, Thanksgiving memories. Just, you know, all kinds of great stuff.
Yep.
That
the King
family.
You guys have a favorite Andy Williams song?
Moon River.
Yeah, Moon River. Yeah, yeah.
I think my favorite was Can't Get Used to Losing You. I love that.
Yes, it has such a skippy little, I don't know, pentameter or whatever. The pace of it is cool.
And it was so
right.
different than the others.
It was almost like a waltz.
And what was crazy is in the 1970s, depending on what radio station you listen to, but in the 1970s, when I was a kid, my childhood pal, I'd go over to his house and his mom would have, you'd hear Elvis, you'd hear Andy Williams, you'd hear, you know, all these different, and I was like, oh, wow, yeah. So kind of keys in with old childhood memories, a lot of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then there's that one guy from Russia.
I actually have an entire fixed song of that. It runs on for like 4 minutes. You're like, oh, my gosh, really? You're killing me here.
It's painful. There's a video to it too. It's painful to watch.
Yeah,
it's
that's what I've got.
It's so 70s though. If you look at the motif,
it's so bad.
It is.
You know, it's really wow. All right, you know, this guy learned, you know, two vowels and a consonant, and they let him go. What's going on?
Oh boy.
Let's try the song with four letters. Go. That's kind of it. Yeah, Dave, I've been coming down with this. Yesterday at Nail Me, I was congested all day long, and today kind of, but not as bad. And I'm like, what the heck? And hopefully it'll just move on out. I don't need to get a cold or anything, but yeah.
No, nobody needs that.
Yep. Yeah, and we're moving into fall, and it's like change of seasons. All I don't know.
Oh,
but
I know.
We do get a change here, but yeah.
It was nice to give the old air conditioners a break.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Well, have you guys already had the shift from hot to cold already?
It's getting cool overnight.
Our evenings have been kind of cool, but only into the 60s, pretty much.
Okay.
We got the high 50s here a couple of days.
Oh, did we? Okay.
Years ago,
but we also still can hit the 80s during the day.
Oh yeah, we did today. Yeah, low 80s.
Yeah. Years ago, when I was living up north, it was like an on-off switch. As soon as you hit October, it's like click. Okay, it's cold. And that was kind of it.
It can get like that around here.
Yeah.
Hey, you were talking about driving in the snow and stuff like that earlier today. Have you ever, do you think you'd be able to drive in the snow after being where you're at for so long?
I was in an accident when in snow and crap. Car
so the answer is no.
No one was hurt. No one was hurt. In fact, they had plowed the roads. And the roads were slick, but they weren't snow. As far as driving in the snow, I would be very careful, but I wouldn't have a problem. I wouldn't be like, oh, I can't go. You know, I'd figure out how to put chains on the tire and head on out or whatever, you know.
Ooh, we got a drive-in coming up.
Ooh,
we got a drive-in in early Oct.
A Hitchcock drive-in.
Hitchcock early Oct. Hitchcock in early Oct. There we go.
Radio driving, yep.
Mm. So now let's see. When I was in the Navy, I was on a ship at sea, and you couldn't see very far off of the ship, and we were in a snowstorm up in the Arctic Circle.
Oh,
absolutely
dude.
Surreal. You're like, not a thing of like, I'm going to die, but like, there's no other aspect of the world that I can see. All you see is snow. That's it. Everywhere. It was like, oh, my God. And
that's
we were in
kinda,
it.
Kind of feel otherworldly almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Never the same experience in anything I've ever run across on the planet.
The real whiteout, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. We were told not to sit down on anything on the top deck because you could get frozen to it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So it was crazy.
The tongue on the frozen flagpole, only worse.
Yeah, forget about that. You're going to lose your tongue.
You'll lose all kinds of stuff depending on what you're sitting on. Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, it was crazy.
Oh, nuts.
Crazy times. Before we hit it out, they told us, all right, everybody, here's a list of stuff you need. And they said, you need... three different sets of ski bib uniforms, go to a ski shop and go get outfitted. And I was like, what? Wait, I'm going to be on a ship in a ski suit? You're kidding. Nope.
At my age, if I was to get on skis, you'd have to dress me up like the Michelin man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A whole lot of bubble wrap, yeah. Don't want to be a Sonny Bono. Yeah.
No. Oh, gosh.
Mm.
Yeah, he was a real tree hugger, wasn't he?
He was. All the way till the end. Yeah, yeah.
I tell you.
All right.
Hey, I'm thankful for Sonny. Sonny brought his share, you know.
True.
And I don't see any of the peripheral things. I just, man, that woman could sing and she looks great. So that was as far as I got, you know. And they had a fun variety show. It was fun.
They did.
And it was funny. There wasn't too much stuff on there that wasn't funny, unlike
True.
Stuff later in TV. But they were freaking hilarious.
Yep. Those were some good times, man.
They were.
I actually had a young
like.
I actually had a young person tell me today that She said it must have been amazing. It sounded like those were fun times back then.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And you cannot rebundle it. You cannot actually, it's like you can't step in the same river twice. You can't go back to,
yeah,
I mean, yeah. You can listen to the albums, you can watch the shows, but it's never going to bring back that exact.
No.
I mean, that was
It'll
an amazing.
It'll bring back the feelings, maybe. It'll bring back the feelings,
right.
But not the actual experience. No.
Right. And
yeah.
And it was magic. There were certain aspects of that time that were just magic. You don't, I don't feel it in today's society.
Yeah.
I saw something recently about back when we were young, what were we doing? We were going out and we were playing outside and we were in the woods and on bicycles and doing stuff. And now young folks are doing absolutely dangerous, horrific things to the point of taking lives just to be famous. And it's like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the world I grew up in.
They're called influencers, yeah.
Yeah.
Put on a bikini, go to Instagram, and you're an influencer. Yeah.
That kind of
okay.
stuff fades rapidly.
Babe, I wouldn't try that if I was you, but you be you.
I was thinking about it. But...
There you go.
Okay, I thought about it. Forget it.
All right, gentlemen, I am running out of gas, and we will be back tomorrow night. Gar, you'll be on Horrible Horror.
I'm hoping, I hope everything turns up. Guys, it was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me.
It always is.
A lot of fun, guys.
Thank you for being here, damn it. I'm glad you seem to be feeling better.
Thank you, damn it. Really? Thank you, damn it.
Damn it.
Damn it.
Damn it, I want to thank you.
Right, so
and your daughter, damn it, Junior. Yeah.
We don't got CW here for her... introduction.
So it's time to bring in the great Schnozola.
Schnozzy-dozzy.
Good night. Good night. Good
night.
It's time to say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
What's more than say good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the same, and
ink-a-dink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night.
You ever wonder if people are still listening?
Good night.
They're guns for punishment.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Do you mind turning off the radio?